targets at Israeli targets in response to the overnight air raid on a Lebanese medical center. Thousands of Jordanians protest against Israel, demanding the closure of the regime's embassy in Amman in solidarity with Gaza and the Hamas resistance movement. Hello and welcome, everybody. Nearly 6 months into the Israeli genocide in Gaza, the regime continues with its bombing and shelling campaign, causing more deaths and destruction across the besieged territory. Over the past couple of hours, Israeli warplanes have targeted three residential buildings in the vicinity of Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza. Regime forces also set Palestinian homes on fire in the area, according to the Israeli military. Its forces continue to lay siege to the hospital, where over two dozen paramedics are still inside in the catastrophic condition in Al-Shaja'iyah, one of the largest neighborhoods in Gaza. The regime's troopers killed eight civilians. Meanwhile, the death toll from overnight strikes on Rafah climbed to 11 elsewhere. Two people were killed in the Israeli shelling of an area near the Boraj refugee camp in central Gaza. The overall death toll from the Israeli onslaught since early October is nearly 32,500, mostly women and children. Our correspondent Moti Abu Mosaba joined us earlier from the central Gaza city of Deir al-Bala to update us on the situation there.
Let's begin from Rafah city, as the Israeli occupation forces intensify their attacks against the residential buildings and the areas, particularly those adjacent to the Egyptian border. When it comes to Khan Yunis city, as you know, the current Israeli aggression against the western part of the city, particularly the vicinity and the surrounding areas of the Nasser medical complex, has still continued so far, with more airstrikes and more artillery shelling that reaches that area. And we are talking about also continuous attacks that are still hitting the residential buildings and the residential areas there, knowing that the vast majority of those buildings were completely destroyed and devastated by the chronic Israeli airstrikes that reached and targeted that area when the Israeli occupation forces carried out their first ground offensive against that area, inflicting more damage and destruction. According to multiple eyewitnesses, that the Israeli occupation forces opened the gunfire directly towards the Palestinian civilians. After releasing them, they were kidnapped from the Nasser medical complex, and after that they were shot dead by the Israeli occupation forces in a continuation of the continuous Israeli crimes and massacres. Over the last night, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against the northern part of Nusrat refugee camp.
Israeli raids on the occupied West Bank have become almost daily occurrences. Over the past several months, the regime troops have carried out new raids, including a drone strike on the city of Jenin and its refugee camp, killing several more Palestinians. We were earlier joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Munawwar Kandil, who gave us more details on that.
A 19-year-old Palestinian was shot and killed by the Israeli forces during a military raid to Jenin city. Now we are speaking about two more Palestinians had been killed, but this time they were killed by an Israeli drone strike. Israeli military carried out a drone strike at an area in the neighborhood of Ad-Damaj in the refugee camp of Jenin, killing two more Palestinians and wounding at least nine others. Those two Palestinians who had been killed, one of them is from the city of Nablus and the second is from Jenin refugee camp, and they were killed in this drone strike. This brings the number of the Palestinians who were killed by the Israeli forces in Jenin since the early hours of Wednesday to three. We have to mention that the Israeli forces had also stormed the town of Qabatia in Jenin. Exchange of fire had been carried out between Palestinian members of the resistance groups and the Israeli forces. The Israeli troops, as usual, they used their guns to shoot the Palestinians. At least five Palestinians had been wounded, according to paramedics. This means that The number of Palestinians who had been killed since the 7th of October is today over 450, maybe specifically 453 Palestinians, in addition to the fact that thousands had been wounded by the Israeli forces, over 7,800 Palestinians had been arrested across the occupied West Bank since the 7th of October.
In a fresh retaliatory attack, the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has fired a salvo of missiles at the Israeli city of Kiryat Shemona in the occupied territories. A home was damaged and two settlers were wounded in the strikes. A plume of black smoke was seen rising over the targeted site. The attack followed an Israeli air raid on a medical facility in southern Lebanon. Israeli warplanes targeted the emergency and Islamic Relief Center in the town of Hebariya, killing several paramedics. Hezbollah had condemned the act of aggression and vowed to avenge the attack. Tensions remain high between Hezbollah and Israel since the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza in early October. Both sides have been exchanging fire, but Israel has intensified its attacks on civilians in Lebanon in recent weeks. Well, in our news review program today, we discuss growing anger in Jordan, with people there demanding authorities cut all kind of relations with the Israeli regime over the Gaza genocide. Let's take a listen to what our guests had to say about it. On this segment of the program, thousands of Jordanians have once again filled the streets of the capital Amman to vent their anger at the U.S.-Israeli genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
Since the beginning of the war and aggression against Gaza, we have been here in the courtyards of Al-Kaluti Mosque in order to send a message to the Palestinian resistance that we are with you and all the Jordanian people are with you. And from here, I appeal to the Jordanian people who are sitting at home for everyone to go out to the streets. What are you waiting for? We must make our voice heard.
There is no need for all this attack by security forces. We have one enemy. Here, there is land for the occupier, the Israeli embassy, and we are here to demonstrate against this land.
This was the second night of violent protests in Amman, with people demanding the government sever all kinds of ties with the Israeli regime and stop the country being a transit for goods into Israeli-occupied territories. They were chanting slogans in support of the Palestinian resistance movement and its military wing, Al-Qassam Brigades. Security forces used batons and tear gas to disperse the angry demonstrators who tried to reach the Israeli embassy on Tuesday evening and during the early hours of Wednesday. Security forces also arrested a number of demonstrators, including at least one female Jordan, which hosts 2.4 million Palestinian refugees, has witnessed several rallies in solidarity with Gazans since Israel launched its war on the besieged strip. The country has also been actively involved in airdropping humanitarian aid into Gaza. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Rumsia, who's joining us from Bethlehem, also co-founder of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Mr. McNapier is joining us from Edinburgh. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Rumsia and Bethlehem. I want to get your perspective on these massive and serious demonstrations that are taking place in Jordan. The demonstrators and protesters who are participating in these rallies, which have been ongoing since the Israelis started this genocidal war against the Palestinians, has been persistent, not just in Jordan, but in many other Arab governments as well. Please break that down for us and the impact that that has had globally, and also given the support that the Jordanians are showing for the Palestinian cause and the anger that they're showing against the Israelis, why are we not seeing any action from the Jordanian government?
Well, to start with, I can say, you know, salute to the Jordanians, Palestinians in Jordan, and internationals in Jordan who flooded the streets of Jordan demonstrating against this genocide that's ongoing, ecocide that's ongoing, etc., and demanding that their government takes good position. So I salute them. I respect them. And as Palestinians here in the occupied territories, we are very grateful to them. For the Jordanian government, I say shame on you that you are repressing your own people from demonstrating, from showing what international law expects from the Jordanian government and people, which is to stop this genocide.
Mr. Napier, I want to get your perspective on the same issue as well, about these demonstrations that are taking place in Jordan, and also if you may expand on these unprecedented pro-Palestinian and anti-Israeli demonstrations, public demonstrations that we've been seeing worldwide.
I mean, it's very clear from everybody who measures it that Israel and its European and American allies are very, very isolated in, you know, in terms of the whole world. The vote at the UNSC was just one stark example of that. Even the British government felt compelled to vote against Israel. But within those governments, within those countries, those governments also are very isolated from their own populations. And we can see this across the USA and across Britain and Europe as well. But Jordan's very special. To see those vast crowds on the streets of Amman, I think in Washington they'll be looking at this and getting very worried. They're already worried that the genocide in Gaza is like an acid eating away at the status quo. That in millions and millions of homes across the region, people can see Palestinians being killed only because they are Palestinians, and Zionists are already selling the land in Gaza as real estate to other settlers. So people can see that they're brothers and sisters, but in Jordan it's their cousins and their relatives who are being massacred in Gaza and in the West Bank only because they are Arabs. And the Jordanian regime, of course, has been complicit in the Zionist project since 1948, but certainly until the present day. Now, what happens next? I think everything now hangs on the next few days, because people who know about these things describe how, in this situation where the popular forces are being repressed by the paramilitary police, everything depends upon the determination and the resoluteness of the mass of demonstrating in order to break the will of the repressive forces.
All right, thanks, gentlemen. That's all the time we have for this segment to the program. Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Rumsia joining us from Bethlehem. And thanks to co-founder of the Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Mr. Mick Napier, joining us from Edinburgh. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. Elsewhere, the political bureau chief of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, has traveled to the Iranian capital for high-level talks. The visit comes a day after the UNSC passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Yusumi Shamadi has the details.
A brief but meaningful presence in front of the cameras. The political bureau chief of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, is in Tehran a day after the United Nations Security Council adopted a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. This is Haniyeh's second trip to Tehran since the Israeli onslaught on the besieged coastal strip on October 7th.
We are going through a historic stage in the fight against the regime, and its turning point is the Al-Aqsa flood. The people of Palestine have shown exemplary resistance, and the resolution that was passed by the UNSC indicates that the Israeli occupation is experiencing unprecedented political isolation. Israel is losing its political cover and protection, even in the Security Council.
Raise their hand.
On Monday, the United Nations Security Council passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, with the U.S. for the first time abstaining from the vote. Washington had vetoed three such resolutions before. This is the result of, quote, the exceptional resistance demonstrated by the people of Gaza, as described by Haniyeh during a meeting with Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei later in the day. where the leader emphasized that the Islamic Republic of Iran will not hesitate to support Palestine.
This visit is very important, taking into account the timing of the trip. As we can see, Mr. Haniyeh has traveled to Tehran just one day after the adoption of the UN Security Council resolution for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. This highlights the importance of Iran's role as a trustworthy and wise friend for Hamas.
Ismail Haniyeh is expected to hold more high-level meetings with Iranian officials, including President Ebrahim Raisi. This is the sixth time that the two officials are meeting since October 7th and the second time that Ismail Haniyeh has traveled to Tehran, signaling the important role that Iran plays in the political equations of the region. Yusuf Shahmadi, Tehran.
More than 100,000 Iranians have attended a huge religious ceremony at Azadi Stadium on Tuesday. The participants marked the birth anniversary of the second Imam of Shia Muslims, Imam Hassan, peace be upon him, and show their unwavering support for the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Farzan Ashurun has more.
This is Iran's largest football stadium, where over 100,000 Iranians gathered on Tuesday to celebrate the birthday of the second Imam of Shia Muslims, Imam Hassan, peace be upon him. During the ceremony, Iranians were seen holding flags and reciting the Holy Quran. Palestine, as the most important issue of the Muslim world, was at the center of the religious event.
People are holding the Palestinian flag, saying they want to share the reward of the ceremony with the Palestinian people.
The situation of the Palestinian people is unpleasant for every Muslim, and I want to share this moment with Palestinians and pray for them.
I want the whole world to know that we have not forgotten the Palestinian people and we will always support them.
The ceremony had a special guest, the leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, Ziad al-Nakhala, who hailed Iranians' unwavering support for Palestine.
Palestinians' hearts are always with the people of Iran. The Holy Quran always unites us. I assure you that Palestine will live on. The Holy Quran will live on. The Palestinian people will continue their resistance.
Today, Iranians once again expressed their solidarity with Palestinians and condemned the Israeli atrocities in the besieged Gaza Strip in one of the largest events in the country. They emphasized that the Palestinian cause is a central issue for all Muslims and will not be forgotten until the liberation of Palestine. Farzan Ashuryun, Tehran.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
2 months.
Yani?
32,000. Bazaar.
Whether man-made or not, food can have fascinating backstories. Products usually take a long journey before they end up on the dining table. Nevertheless, the food industry follows several golden rules that have helped it steadily grow over time. The most important of these is continuous product innovation and improved production processes to reduce costs and wastage. Others involve packaging and product accessibility, but probably the king of all rules is the taste that drives the food industry.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets, profits, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will be exploring the food industry and its related agricultural markets. We wanted to see how the food sector has expanded over the years and what companies are doing to increase their profits. So, let's check out the Tasty Grub.
To become more familiar with how much work goes into food production, we visited Golha Food Industries. It was established nearly a century ago, and its products are now a household name. It produces hundreds of items in 7 categories, such as dried legumes and fruit, spices and canned products. It also takes great pride in its healthy product line, including gluten-free flour products. This producer has devoted a lot of attention to the packaging of its products. Due to its diverse product list, it purchases such materials as cans, plastic, and cardboard to design the appropriate type of storage systems for distribution. The company has a massive daily output due to its expansive production facilities. Most of the work is done by automated machines, but the fine details are handled by experienced staff. All production processes start when raw material enters the company. These materials are first tested for quality before hitting the production floors, most of which are domestically supplied. After being tested, the material is sent to various closed circuit machines for processing. Then it is time for sorting and more quality control tests before packaging.
Food production is a very sensitive process requiring many checks and controls that guarantee the final product is safe for consumption. And production machines play an essential role as they reduce errors and maintain constant output results. Plus, many of these machines have been domestically engineered, whereas they were previously imported at high prices.
This company has a highly equipped quality control and research and development lab. It's where many new products are created and food safety standards are controlled. Moreover, the staff in this department implement food sciences to make innovative products. It might be interesting to know that this department also has some of the best food tasters. This producer has been awarded Best Research and Development Department in Food Production for many consecutive years. Among its many achievements, it has also been awarded the certificate of favored brand by customers. This wouldn't be possible without adhering to strict national and international food safety and production management standards. Following such standards has helped it maintain its export share in the global food market. With years of experience, this company has grown such that it provides thousands of employment opportunities, both directly and indirectly. It also has thousands of agencies and stores all over the country. Plus, its products can also be purchased online. As part of its future vision, this company is looking to increase its market share both domestically and abroad. It also has long-term plans to increase production and improve the production process for efficiency.
The Iranian food industry has taken giant strides away from its traditional production methods. Industry participants say using food sciences and new technologies has helped the food industry grow faster than before. Never more than now has food been more accessible. In fact, it only requires a touch of a few buttons to receive it at home. Therefore, food packaging is a critical part of the production.
Over the last decade, there has been a great emphasis on developing packaging for the food industry. This is because Iran indigenized many machines needed to process and produce food items such as deli meats, beverages, pickles, and so much more. Proper packaging also increases shelf life, which is important for consumers. Previously, food items such as spices and dairy products were purchased bulk from customers abroad due to a lack of packaging. While exporting items in bulk has benefits, it's not as profitable as selling prepackaged foodstuff. So, in addition to adding value to raw products such as meat, companies have also designed attractive packaging to contain food in more manageable portions. Such a strategy increases not only product quality, but also food safety, which helps producers meet international export standards. This trend also helps companies with branding and has created job opportunities for designers.
As you probably already know, the food industry is heavily dependent on production in the agriculture sector. So it's no surprise that the agriculture sector holds the pulse of national food security and food exports. Plus, it is one of the only sectors that has been barely impacted by the US-imposed sanctions and the global coronavirus outbreak. That was horrible.
We looked at some figures from the Ministry of Agriculture to see how this sector is doing. Last year, around 6 million tons of agricultural and foodstuff products were exported. Trade of these products raked in roughly $4 billion. Pistachio, saffron, and confectionery products topped the export charts in value during that period. Other agriculture sectors, such as livestock, poultry, and aquaculture, have also generated millions of dollars in exports. Last year, nearly 450,000 tons of these items were sent to markets in neighboring regions worth $500 million. Agriculture accounts for 8% of the country's gross domestic product. It might be interesting to know that around half of Iran's total non-oil trade comes from this sector. That's all based on data from Iran's Ministry of Agriculture. According to Iran's Customs Administration, the total non-oil trade value rose nearly 40% last year. Over 120 million tons of non-oil products worth $72 billion were traded with other countries in that period. Meanwhile, the government has implemented measures to encourage the development of agriculture. One trend this sector is witnessing is the application of smart technologies for the cultivation and harvest of various products. There has also been a boom in developing greenhouses and green practices to preserve natural resources. The word plastic was initially used to describe pliable and easily shaped objects. However, it only recently became a name for a category of materials called polymers. Such materials are abundant in nature. Take cellulose, for example. It's the material that makes up the cell walls of plants. However, synthetic polymers are a more recent invention of the last 150 years. These come from the plentiful carbon atoms found in fossil fuels. Since then, They have become an integral part of the industry, technology, and even various sciences.
We will explore Iran's plastic and polymer productions. We will also check out some of its downstream markets and their contributions to the national economy. These days, we use more plastic than ever before. It's terrible. So where does this material come from? And what goes into making this stuff? Let's find out.
Our quest for answers led us to a company specializing in making various polymer products. Parsa Polymer Sharif was established some 20 years ago and is a knowledge-based company that was born in the research department of the University of Sharif. As a leading advanced polymer compound manufacturer, it makes various products essential to everyday living. It produces compounds based on commodity thermoplastic resins like PP, PE, and the famous PET, or PET. It also engineers resins like PVC and so much more. This knowledge-based company is a major supplier of raw materials to many industries. Some include original equipment manufacturers in the automotive market and PVC pipe producers in the construction industry. Over the years, this company has helped Iran save millions on products that would otherwise be imported. This firm has three main functions: research and development, innovation center, and production. It also has a brand new line for researching and producing biodegradable polymers for the packaging industry. Most of the raw materials needed for production are domestically purchased. When this stuff enters the company, it is first tested and graded based on its quality. Then, according to its intended use, the raw material is formulated and sent to machines for production.
Machines used in the polymer industry utilizes some of the most advanced machinery for production. The extruder is one of the most commonly used machines. They play a central role in plastic production. Extruder lines are the largest converters of plastics worldwide. Some of these machines can be domestically manufactured while others are still imported.
Its products are all tested in its well-equipped research and development lab. The various granules and resin compounds undergo over a dozen tests while being analyzed for quality here. Also, new product formulas are created in this highly technical research and development department. Through these facilities, the company is expanding its product portfolio. Products made here are produced along the lines of exports. So, national and international quality standards are implemented during the production processes. This means the quality of products found here doesn't just match international standards, they go beyond the quality of competing foreign brands in the international arena. The headquarters of this company is located in Sharif University Advanced Technologies Incubator. Owing to this, it has strong relations and collaborations with the scientific community. It has also been awarded for its contributions to the scientific and industrial sectors over the past years. This knowledge-based company also exports its products. The company has a unique future vision strongly intertwined with sustainable business development. This is partly due to its forward-thinking and social and environmental responsibility outlook.
Now, polymers are the primary materials that build many other products. Plastic items have different polymer formulations depending on their application. The majority of polymers made in Iran are domestically consumed. Some of its biggest customers are in the construction sector. Also, plastic is extensively used in the medical industry and transportation.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. Moreover, plastic has played a central role in the development of the medical industry over the past 60 years. These materials are used to create hemodialysis machines, disposable needles, IV drips, and testing equipment vital to modern medicine. Plastics have also had a considerable impact on developing high-quality prosthetics. The National Medical Device Directorate estimates that Iran's share in the global medical device market will reach well over $7 billion in the next 3 years. PVC materials are also largely used in Iran's construction industry. For example, Iran's Doors and Windows Manufacturers Association estimates the domestic demand for PVC doors and windows is around 35,000 tons annually. This is partly due to the current residential construction boom in the country. The home appliance industry is also another mammoth customer of the polymer industry. Based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran has doubled its production in this sector over the last 3 years. In 2021, around 15 million home appliance units were produced, with exports soaring to roughly $140 million. So, polymer production is key in expanding many manufacturing industries, which have raked in large amounts of foreign revenue for the country.
Well, I believe it is that time of the show where I should take a little break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. Take it away.
Despite all the advancements in technology and the problems it has solved, food security is one it hasn't. In fact, it is becoming more and more of an issue beyond the countries that have always been grappling with it. One solution is to, well, end inflation and the global economic crisis, but that's hardly a solution. There's no end in sight with that. But another way is to use technology to make things more efficient. We wouldn't be needing more land because we're not getting it thanks to desertification of more and more land. We also wouldn't be needing more water because we're also not getting it, also thanks to desertification. We would actually need less of both if only we could manage our resources better.
Iran has some potential for farming and agriculture, and that's a massive understatement if you've ever heard one. But we could definitely do with some improvements, some innovations in the field, especially with irrigation, because, well, we've been experiencing some drought and some water shortages a little bit more than what climate change would warrant. And that's why we're here to check out a smart greenhouse that believes has the answer, that the shakeup that the industry needs to be a lot more efficient, especially with water, plus some extra goodies. So stay tuned to this episode of The Bazaar to check out what they've been able to come up with.
About that efficiency, greenhouses can help provide that by creating a controlled environment that, while it could be much smaller than a field, it can yield higher quality produce and more produce per acre. Greenhouses can protect the crops and vegetables from extreme weather conditions, pests, or really any other external threat. The parameters that are controlled in a greenhouse are light, ventilation, humidity, and temperature. This would allow the farmers to create the kind of optimal micro-ecosystem that would eventually lead to them growing healthier, tastier, more nutritious, and, you know, better-looking produce.
What you will find in this smart greenhouse are tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, bell pepper, and cucumbers. There are certain types of fruits and vegetables that are preferred to be used in greenhouses, for example, the ones that I just mentioned. And there are certain types of crops that are not optimal for greenhouse use, for example, wheat and rice. So, but that's just some information about greenhouses in general. What makes this particular greenhouse unique and smart is that all of the parameters that need to be kept in check in a greenhouse are all monitored and manipulated remotely through the cloud and Internet of Things, instead of some worker or some farmers coming in and out of the greenhouse to manipulate things manually. That's the smart aspect of it in a nutshell. But to find out more information about the smartness of this greenhouse, let's hear from some of the experts here.
In this greenhouse, we measure all essential parameters for the plants, like temperature, moisture, CO2, ambient light, the water parameters, and the moisture of the roots, using the available sensors and control them with the actuators and the smart control unit. And also remotely control it via Internet of Things. With properly controlling the climate and the irrigation system, we increased the productivity up to 30% and decreased the water consumption by up to 40% comparing other hydroponic greenhouses in our country. And in the next step, we are trying to recycle the drained water of the irrigation system and pass it through some filters and put it back again into the irrigation system in order to further decrease the water consumption. And also, we are developing a robotic harvester, including a mobile-based manipulator, soft gripper, and vision system equipped with artificial intelligent algorithm in order to detect the ripe crops and pick them in the proper time.
1% of the world's water resources are fresh water, and most of it, in fact, 70% of it, is used in agriculture. What we choose to do with that tiny, finite reserve is a responsibility that we need to bear. Greenhouses can control the irrigation of plants. You may have sophisticated plumbing systems in the ground or in the cocoa peats, as you will see, to prevent overwatering, which can promote rots and fungal diseases, and reduce evaporation, saving huge amounts of water in the process. There is even the option to recycle the runoff water and put it back into the system to further save up on water. The great thing about this particular smart greenhouse is that you don't need to be born into a farmer family that has thousands of acres of land to make this a viable option to you. You can own land as small as 100 square meters and it would still be a financially viable option for you. Especially since after the initial installation phase and the setup process, you won't be needing much manpower to control the environment.
Interest has been shown in this smart greenhouse by certain countries, especially in Africa, such as Kenya, Niger, and Ethiopia. The idea, and of course the working proof of the idea, really has the potential to shake up the industry. And if it catches on, it can only mean good things for the farmers and the food sector in general. Thank you for staying tuned to another episode of Bazaar.
Many thanks for that wonderful report. Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. I've been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers, sisters, listeners. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. One of the keys that we've been looking at and dissecting and discussing is the moral support that we have to give to our brothers and sisters in faith. One of the things that we have to do towards our brothers and sisters is when we hear
a lot of gossip about them, a lot of misinformation about them, a lot of reputation tarnishing about them, a lot of defamation about them. When people want to defame our brothers and sisters in faith, these things happen. We, technically speaking, call it riba, or namima, or even buhtan. These are mental diseases. Not only are they punishable by Allah, but they are diseases nevertheless. They are spiritual diseases, moral, ethical diseases. We have a lot of people that would come and talk badly about our brothers. Sometimes it is not them, but rather they're conveying what they've heard or what's been going around. Amir al-Mu'mineen says one day in the minbar, or he was in the mosque, or he was addressing people nevertheless. He says, Ayyuhan nas, or people. So when he used the word nas, he's talking to every human being. He's not talking to the Muslims only now. Man aratha min akhihi wathiqat deenin wasadad. Whoever knew about his brother in faith, that when it comes to his deen and the way of life, that is good. فَلَا يَسْمَعَنَّ فِيهِ أَقَاوِلَ الرِّجَالِ. Then let him not give or lend an ear to anyone that talks badly about him. You know your brother. You know his faith. You know his religion. You know his faith. You know how good he is. Why would you listen to those who just want to tarnish his reputation? He also said, ضَعْ أَمْرَ أَخِيكَ عَلَىٰ أَحْسَنَهِ. Even if you heard things about your brother, and even if you might think that, well, it is possible that he could or might commit such an act, the Imam says, ضَعْ أَمْرَهُ. Put his affair on the best of ways. Like, think, give him the benefit of the doubt. وَلَا تَطْلُبَنَّ بِكَلِمَةٍ خَرْجَتْ مِنْ أَخِيكَ سُوءًا. It says, like, even if a bad word comes out of your brother's mouth, don't take it in a negative, bad way. وَأَنْتَ تَجْدُ لَهَا خَيْرَ مَحْمَلٍ. While you can take it on a good note. He says something, and he directly and plainly said it to me. He said to me, you this and that. I'm like, okay, maybe he's angry. Maybe he's under pressure. Maybe he had a problem in the house with his spouse, for example, with his children. Maybe he has a financial problem. It could be a number of reasons that caused him to say what he said. Therefore, I'm just going to overlook it. I'm like, bro, we're good. Inshallah, look, I'll leave you alone. We'll discuss this later. And you leave it at that. You, because he's your brother at the end of the day, he will settle down, things will settle down, and you guys will go back to normal. But if you fight at that moment, then you ruin the opportunity of you being together again. Let us take a short break, and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amoli, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafati, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدری گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون. اینم هم امام گفته دیگه.
When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very imam has mentioned.
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی.
We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are still listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. One of the things that we have to do for our brothers and sisters in faith is when they get accused, we have to defend them. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, when a believing person accuses his believing brother in whatever accusation you want to throw at your brother in faith, he says, faith will dissolve from the heart of that person in the same way salt dissolves into water. And when salt dissolves into water, it's a very quick process. It doesn't take long. It takes in matter of seconds. Salt dissolves inside water. The Imam says, the minute you accuse a brother in faith with anything, the minute iman disappears and evaporates from your heart. So we have a duty to protect them, not only from those who accuse them, but us from accusing them as well. If you are certain and sure about an event that happened or your brothers did, now your duty, if you are a concerned citizen, a concerned Muslim brother, go to him, talk to him, tell him right from wrong. Do your duty when it comes to al-amr bil-ma'ruf wa nahi anil munkar. That's your duty. You don't want to do that? Fine, by all means. Keep it to yourself. The minute you go and you talk and you say, Fulan did so and so when he didn't, then this is you accusing him. If he really did, then you have done backbiting, you've backbitten him. In either cases, you've committed major crimes in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Either bahattahu or either اغتبتهو. And both of them, that Allah says, you will suffer the wrath on the day of judgment. And mind you guys, when I say you, I'm using the you as an example, not you personally. So why would we do this to ourselves? And not only are we going to have this iman disappear from our hearts, but we get ourselves in very sticky situation with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Therefore, the Ahl al-Bayt, they said, you need to protect your brother in faith. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, he said, all people who only believed with their tongue, while iman has not sank in their hearts, لا تذموا المسلمين. Do not talk badly about the Muslims. Do not follow their mistakes. فإنه من تتبع عوراتهم تتبع الله عورته. For whoever seeks the mistakes of the Muslims, Allah himself will seek their mistakes. I don't want Allah seeking my faults and mistakes, because if he does, I'm gone. It's game over. Guys, this is what the Prophet says. The rest is up to you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
A
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
headlines, the U.S. Israeli genocide, a war on the Gaza Strip, enters its 173rd day with the death toll approaching 32,500, mostly women and children. Lebanon's Hezbollah fires a barrage of